got a few screws loose since the days of my youth. It's a few screws loose podcast. I got a few screws loose and I'm telling you the truth. It's a few screws loose podcast. I got a few screws loose, you don't really want proof. It's a few screws loose podcast. I got a few screws loose, why I do what I do. It's a few screws loose podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you back to another episode of A Few Screws Loose, the podcast, where we have mental health discussions by mentally ill men of color. My name is Dan, and you can keep up with me on Twitter and on IG at I Am Dan on Drugs. Keep up with the show on Twitter, IG, and sometimes YouTube at Screws Loose Pod. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a huge surprise for you all. Guess who's Bizak?
Drum roll, please. P from Charlotte is back. I haven't been around in a long time, but I'm still alive. Me and Dan didn't kill each other like some of y'all thought. You know, we just had a little off season like everybody else does. Are we not entitled to that? So I'm P from Charlotte, in case you forgot me. You can catch me on Instagram and on Facebook. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me start that over.
Nigga forgot where he at. Damn.
He is here Facebook. You can catch me on Instagram and on, what is it called? Twitter. Okay, that goes to show you how much I've been on Twitter. One more time.
The Twitter machine.
You can find me on Instagram and on the Twitter machine at P from Charlotte. All one word, P from Charlotte.
So as most of you know, we have... Everyone's still kind of struggling with the whole coronavirus, which is, you know, like I said last episode, it's something that we're not going to touch on anymore because it's like beating a dead horse. Everybody's talking about it. Our experiences probably don't differ very much than any of your experiences or anybody else's for that matter, because we're all going through this shit together. So hopefully we make it out on the other side relatively unscathed. But today, I think what the conversation we're going to have is growing up in the area that we grew up in. He had a solo episode a few months back talking about how he grew up and some of the things he remembered from his childhood. I did the same in a prior episode as well. So go back and check those episodes out. I forget the name of them, but they're back there that way somewhere. So one of the things we never really touched on, though, is guidance. Who guided us? Who helped us become the men we are today? Because let's face it, we did not just, you know, guide ourselves or whatever. Everyone has guidance, whether it be niggas in the streets, whether it be family members, whoever, just somebody you look up to, someone to kind of help you navigate certain things in life. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, P, just off the top of your head, do you have somebody in mind that played just like a pivotal role in you becoming a man or the man you are?
I've got a collection of people, but it was all
in your basement.
Yeah, they're actually in my basement now in pieces. No, I had a collection of people throughout different phases of my life. I can't say someone continuous outside of, you know, my father and my mom. Obviously, but different people at different stages that came in and helped me when I needed them for where I was at. So, you know, we'll go into all of that in this show and show some love to these people, man. We don't always get to talk about those who have been instrumental in helping us become who we are. And I think there's a shortage of that in the world these days. So, you know, also, like Dan said, we're not going to touch on all that negative stuff going on today, because frankly, it drives everyone crazy and it drives us crazy. So, looking forward to getting into this, man, and showing some love to the people who deserve it.
Yeah, man. So some of the people, I guess, that, like, I guess the same thing as you. I had different people in different parts of my life. Now, you know, let's just start kind of from a young age. You know the type of niggas I was running with in the streets. What's funny is me and P, we've been like brothers since way back, since like, shit, I don't know, since Daz Effects. But, like, we never ran in the same circles. We all knew the same people, but P, he had his own circle and I had my own circle. And what's funny is my circle was a bunch of knuckleheads that kept getting locked up, kept getting arrested, kept getting in trouble. Thieves, drug dealers, you name it. That's the people I ran with early on. And I remember even, you know, my mother, she wasn't a huge influence on my life, at least at that age. But I remember her saying, yo, you need to stop hanging around them. They're going to get you in trouble. They're nothing but trouble. You know, you're going down the wrong path. And as a kid, you're like, whatever, you don't know nothing. And my mother, she's 17 years older than me. So when I was like 13, she was like 30. And now looking at it, that's not that old. But I'm like, hey, you old. You don't know shit. You don't know shit.
Oh,
you don't know
old.
How it is in these streets. Yeah, exactly, man. So that's you remember some of the dudes I ran with. A lot of them are dead or still in jail, man. So like my earliest memories in the neighborhood I grew up in, at least, is running with the criminals, drug dealers, and what have you. So what did your friends, your circle of friends at, you know, a young age look like?
Well, the difference between us is we grew up in different neighborhoods. So I moved around the whole city quite a bit. And my brother's 8 years older than me. My uncle's range between 20, 30 years older than me and only maybe 15 years older than me. So we grew up. Let me start over. When I was born, we lived in uptown and that was the neighborhood. And so that's a totally different area of the city than where Dan lived at, which was, you know, a little ways down the road. And it wasn't like now when you have the internet and all that stuff. But, you know, when you're grown up, you end up associating with people from other neighborhoods. But when you're young, like we were, you kind of stick with your friends. So we end up moving from uptown to the south side. And I went to the school on the south side, you know, Maury, which was where all the south side and project kids went to, besides the project kids that got bussed to the other side of town. And after my granddad died, who, by the way, was, and I still say is, the most instrumental person in my life. He passed when I was 7. We moved to the west side, where a lot of those kids that I was mentioning that I used to live near uptown got bused to the school there. So I ended up going to school with a lot of the kids who I knew as a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 year old. So I moved over to the west side. And it's funny because my friends from the west side were still kids from the projects in the south side that I knew back in the day. So we kind of had a different crew that we ran with. You know, I'm not saying that the types of kids were very different. You know, we all ran around and did knuckleheaded stuff because I was a knucklehead early on for no reason at all. Then I was just a knucklehead. But we and Dan really got linked up when I moved from in middle school. I moved from the West Side school down to GW and I met Dan there. And I was already doing stupid shit back then. And then we really, really clicked the next year in eighth grade. And that's when our groups of friends kind of started to mesh. Well, I'll say I started to mesh more with his group of friends, because I was kind of transient. Most of my friends already were in jail in eighth grade. So I had nobody to hang with. It was just me and Dan. And I started to kind of take to his friends, too. So his friends became my friends. And that was kind of how it was early on.
Yeah, man. And what's funny, too, is my neighborhood. And, you know, looking back now, that's all I can say. But my neighborhood was one of those neighborhoods where all the people in the hood was like, man, if you ain't from around here, shit, you can't even come through here. We gonna fuck you up if you come through here. And it's funny because
it was like that uptown too.
Yeah, and it's funny because P came through the neighborhood and everybody just dapped him up. Hey, what's up, man? What's up, man? And shit, I used to hang out uptown when my boy lived in the projects right off of Route 1. So it's like that shit's only applicable to certain people. I think if you're like one of them people that run around repping your neighborhood and yeah, stuff like that. But I mean,
being all loud.
We also we worked in Southeast DC and we used to walk through all the neighborhoods you could think of. This is like late 90s. And we used to walk through Southeast.
Yeah, it was still violent back then. It was still over 300-400 murders a year back then.
Man, it still is today. Shit. But it's funny because we had no fear because we were able to fit in anywhere because we knew the rules. And the rules in any neighborhood is don't fuck with nobody and they ain't going to fuck with you for the most part. So I remember hanging out with, like I said, the criminals and what have you. I started getting in trouble with the law, which is previous episodes talked about that as well. So I ended up having first to have a mentor, right? Like a big brother or whatever you call it.
He used to get that dude in hell, man.
Hell yeah. Because I wanted him to stop fucking coming around. Like, he was supposed to come pick me up at a certain time, like say 3 p.m. He'd be banging on the door. My mama wasn't home. She was at work. So I make the nigga wait outside. And this was court mandated, actually. So he would just be sitting on the porch waiting for me. Like, come on, man. You coming? Nope.
Didn't you jump out of his car once on King Street?
Yeah, I jumped out because I needed a pack of cigarettes. So
Matt was 13 years old.
Young, this nigga wasn't trying to buy me no cigarettes, right? So I jumped out. You remember that little...
Hold on. You was mad because your court-appointed mentor wouldn't buy you at 13 some Newports.
Yeah.
That's unreasonable, man.
Well, at the time, I didn't think it was. Man, you remember that little drugstore that was right next to Ross on King Street?
Yeah, it was right across from California Pizza Kitchen.
Yeah, them old people, they had to be like in their 80s. They sold cigarettes to anybody. They didn't care. They were just like, they didn't give a shit.
They were selling cigarettes to people in the 40s when there wasn't no law.
Right, man, I'm telling you. And that's why I jumped out dude's car while the joint was rolling and ran up in that store and bought some cigarettes and walked home, man. But I can say that the whole mentor shit and the big brother shit didn't work for me. And again, I have an aversion for any type of authority or people telling me what to do. That doesn't go over well with me. So then they changed my mentor to one of the teachers at our school, a history teacher. And this dude had a Gumby haircut. So he always, to me, he just looked like a sexual predator or some
shit.
Who,
that Bama?
Yeah.
Oh, that nigga. Man, that Bama shouldn't be mentoring nobody. He is a shady little nasty dude, man. Everybody knew
he
that.
He looked like one, man. He looked, if you had to like describe a pedophile, that is who I would describe, man. But his daughter was fine as shit.
That clown tried to threaten me one time in class, like he was embarrassing me. And then I said, do I need to call my uncles up here? And then he shut up real quick because he taught my uncles back in the 70s. And I said, oh, you going to do something? I said, I need to call my uncle up here. Do I need to call? You know, I ain't going to say the name. And then he realized, oh, shit, let me shut up. He realized that real quick. If anybody don't know me, I'm related to the whole city of Alexandria. So he knew real quick that wasn't a good move.
That dude was a bitch, man. So I ran him off too. And then that's how I ended up having to they let me pick my mentor or my big brother. So I picked my cousin, one of my damn, pick you. I picked my favorite cousin who's probably about 10 years older than me. And I looked up to him. And
hold on, real quick. Let me interrupt you. You picked him only to give him a hard time.
Yeah,
you threw the broomstick through his legs.
Nah, that was old. I hit him with the with the big 5 gallon thing of pennies.
That's right. Why you volunteer him to come help you and you just made his life miserable?
Cause I thought he wasn't gonna come. I thought he was just gonna say he came and be like, yeah, you know, we went out and did this. Yeah, we went out and played football. We went out to the Capitals game or some shit. This nigga
Capital
actually showed
game.
Up.
You know that's a lie.
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, this is my favorite cousin. He gonna look out for me. Man, this nigga showed up. Was like, come on, cuz. We about to go somewhere. I'm like, nigga, I ain't going nowhere. Man, just come on, man. Come on. I gotta do this shit because it's the courts. And, you know, and then my mom's gonna be mad at me. So I said, nigga, I ain't going nowhere.
Ain't
so he tried to grab me by my arm when I was running upstairs. And I was like, all right, cool. I got you. Now I'm gonna come with you. And when somebody said something like that, especially in our generation, is I yeah, I got you. Okay, yeah, I'm gonna do that. I came downstairs with one of them big 5 gallon Kentwood water bottles full of pennies and went upside that nigga head with the joint. That shit was heavy too. The shit broke in half and pennies flew everywhere. So he was just like, man, I should fuck you up. But you know what? I'm gonna just leave. I was like, yeah, shit, you better leave. And my mom's came home and was like, why is there like $72 worth of pennies on my floor? I was rolling, man. But I say all that to say that this cousin actually did become a very pivotal person in my development later on, though. So, yeah, man, that was the first time that someone tried to guide me, and it was court ordered, which is why it didn't work, man. So on your side of things, right, who was the first person that actually stepped in without your request or without anyone telling them, yo, you need to take P and, you know, show them the ropes, teach them stuff? Who was the first person that actually stepped in and you actually listened to them?
Well, the thing is, nobody really made a conscious effort to step in for any particular reason. It was just, when was I ready to listen, or when was I ready to talk or ask people for anything? So I got a large family. Like I said, I got five uncles from my mother alone. My granddad was very instrumental in my early life. You know, my brother's 8 years older than me. And, you know, my dad's always been around. He, you know, always told me things. See, the thing about my parents, and I kind of take this approach with my kids now too, is they're not going to beg you to do what you're supposed to do, right? So it's either you're not going to do what you're supposed to do and deal with the consequences, whatever that may be, whether it be from them or whether it be from the world or life or school or anything, or you're just going to do what you're supposed to do. And that was how they approached it. So early on, of course, when I was doing stupid stuff in school, being bad in elementary school, not doing my work, of course, I would get in trouble here and there. But as I got older and it was clear that I wasn't listening like I was supposed to, it was one of those things where it was like, well, he gonna learn on his own. And that's essentially what happened. So I will say it was probably when I started to actually be more close with my brother, because, you know, he was older than me. So, of course, I'm not going to hang with him when I'm 7 and he's 15, you know, 16 years old. When I was in 8th grade, I started to, you know, smoke weed and all that. And, you know, I always laugh and say I feel bad because I'm the one that got Dan smoking. And, you know, he kept the habit for a long time and I quit a long time ago. But I was a weed smoking fool. So I knew my brother did too. And what ended up happening was we kind of started clicking on that. And he didn't like step in and say, you need to do this, you need to do that. It was just, we would get high and smoke or chill or talk. And he would just say little things like, you know, one of the things that kept me safe for most of my life, and I still take this to my adult life, is he told me back in the day, if you feel in your gut that something is wrong, don't do it. Like, if, you know, meaning if you feel like, don't, if I do this, I'm gonna get in trouble. If I do this, I might get arrested. Don't do it. And I'm trying to tell you, Dan, that really saved me a lot, because look, for y'all that don't know, I hung with Dan. We did a lot of stupid shit, a lot of illegal shit. I did a lot of illegal shit on my own, but I always knew where to draw the line, right? And that was thanks to my brother. you know, whether it be, hey, man, you want to come with us? We can rent a pipe head car. Nah, y'all, I'm all right. I'll stay home. And stuff like that. When I would get propositions to do things.
What can possibly go wrong?
Yeah, when I would get proposition to do things like, hey, so-and-so stole his mom's car, let's roll. I'm like, nah, y'all, I'm all right. I'll take the bus. I would just know I ain't going to do that. Too much could go wrong. And I'm trying to tell you, like, that has really saved me. I'm the only one of my friends that was doing the same shit but never got arrested. And I just always knew when things didn't feel right. And that was my brother. That was one of the first things that I learned from, I'm not going to say one of my eldest, but my brother was essentially, like we called, back in the day, we said old heads. We didn't mean way older than us. Old heads was people that was maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years older than us that was still doing stuff but could give us advice. And that's what we mean by old heads. And we respected them. And when they told us something, we knew you better listen, because they've been through stuff. You know, it wasn't no internet back then. It wasn't no, like Mike Epps said, I was a thug till I realized you had to do that shit. You know, back in the day, one, you didn't call yourself a thug. Other people called you a thug behind your back. Two, you didn't do stuff for attention. You know, three, you didn't have a resource to, let me go look up this and look up that so I can learn how to pretend to be a gangbanger or pretend to be a gangster or pretend to be a drug dealer. You was either really doing it or you wasn't. And if you really was doing it,
book, man, being a gangster for dummies 101.
It wasn't no book. If you really was doing stuff that we was doing, you had to really do it. And you also had to worry about the cops. Worry about people trying to pull your card every, you know, because like I always say, when you was in the street, you got to renew that that qualification anytime somebody wants to test it.
And let me jump in here too, man. The reputation was a big thing growing up, right? We all had reputations, whether it be a reputation for being soft, for being hard, for being a thug, a gangster, whatever. But your reputation followed you no matter where you went, up into like, I'd say 18, 19, 20 years old. And there came a time where even if you didn't particularly choose this reputation, people still viewed you as such and would test that particular reputation you had. So if you went through the streets making a name for yourself and people knew you as like Pete's talking about, like a gangster or a thug or what have you, people would actually test that shit and you might not be prepared to live up to your reputation. So you had to be very careful about the reputation that followed you.
Yeah, I think our way of kind of handling that was we never wanted to get caught slipping, meaning we didn't necessarily. I'm not, when I say looked for trouble, we weren't out there starting stuff, right? But at the same time, when we knew that there was a potential problem with somebody, we would confront it head on and try to get the jump on it, right? So we was always involved in things. But at the same time, you know, I was known as a guy, even though I like to fight and I used to whoop ass, I didn't have to fight that much. And, you know, Dan, I told my wife this before. I said, you know, back in the day, if you think about all the tough kids from your school, all the kids that everybody knew don't fuck with, how many times you seen them fight? You didn't have to, right? So,
exactly.
You know, that was kind of how we got along. We didn't really have to fight that much. But secondarily, I was known as a guy who always had weed and always had things to sell. I used to sell anything. I used to sell damn window cranks and doorstops in GW, right? I don't know how people would buy it.
Crackhead.
Yeah, I stole all the yearbooks and sold all the yearbooks. Remember that? I stole the teacher's yearbook. She was crying. I snuck it back in and put it back. I stole one for her and put another one back in because I felt bad. I had a conscience, see? But your reputation always preceded you, man. And you always either, you know, I'm not saying that you had to live up to it to impress nobody. Because we didn't. See, here's the thing, man. Our generation didn't really do shit to impress nobody. Because the reason why is we would get locked up back then, right? Not like now. Motherfuckers was going to jail. So it's like you didn't do stuff for attention. You did stuff because you wanted to do it. And if anything, man, you didn't want people to know what you was doing.
See, speaking of going to jail too and reputations, right? What's funny is like when I got locked up and they had the when I was in the group home and they had the program where you actually left the group home to go to the public school, but then you get bussed right back to the group home. Man, once people found out I was in that group home and I was locked up and shit, like, yo, everybody wanted to fuck with me as far as be cool with me. Like, yo, this nigga must be hard. And it's like, I really wasn't that hard, but just being that I was going through that situation, being in that group home, which I was with, like, I was in that group home with a whole lot of hardcore people. I wasn't one of them. I was just like a regular dude. But since I had the reputation and people knew that that's where I was, yo, man, you know how much pussy I got because of that?
I bet. Like, shoot, my friend, my homie that I hung with, I'm not going to say in his name, you know, back in the day, everybody thought he was a thug and was a fighter. But I knew him since elementary school and he really wasn't that. He'd been to jail a lot, but his crimes was mainly drug stuff. And I think he got in one fight that he got in trouble for, but people assumed he was a thug, and he was like, I ain't no thug. I just got locked up once. And yeah, I mean,
that's how it was, man. Exactly, man. So while I was running the streets, and this is after I got out of the detention center and the group homes and stuff, one of the first people that I actually turned to, and this was like a chance meeting or whatever, a chance hangout. Everyone knew him. Everyone looked up to him. And it was this dude in our city. His name was O, right? And like, yeah, everyone.
Real quick. Before you started to chill with O, I met them through my brother. When I switched, mm-hmm, transferred to the school that I was talking about that we went to, my brother already knew them. See, my brother's only 8 years older than me. So I meant to say this when we were talking about neighborhoods.
Hold on. O's like 3 years older than us, so shit. So he's only like 5 years younger than your brother.
Yeah, see, my brother used to work at the pool, and he also used to be in the neighborhood by where the high school was. So he knew them. And another reason why I was able to go to a lot of these neighborhoods and fit in was because my brother knew a lot of these people. So I met O and his brother when I first got to the school. Because my brother said, hey, look out for my little brother. He getting ready to come to that school. Look out for him. And they met me. They actually, let me tell you, I don't know if I ever told you the story. I was walking up the steps like my second day of school at
that
the,
when
at
that
GW.
Nigga grabbed you?
Yeah. Like, random dude just grabbed me, and another dude roll up on me, and I'm thinking, damn, man, these motherfuckers about to jump me? I don't even know these bammers. And he was like, hey, you pee? I was like, yeah. He's like, what's up, dog? What's up? Your brother told us to look out for you. I'm like, oh, man, I thought I was about to get my ass kicked. But, yeah, man. I almost forgot about that story. That shit was funny. I was like, who the hell is these bammers, man? I'm about to get jumped already?
On day one, man. See, I knew him because I used to hang with some of his younger cousins or whatever who were the people I was hanging with. And just one night, I guess he was bored or something. And he wanted to go to a bowling alley and hang out with some chicks. And much like us, a lot of the people that were in his circle were locked up. So he didn't have anyone to go with. So he just randomly called me. He's like, hey, man. You want to go to the bowling alley? It's some bitches there. So I was like, okay.
Back in the day when somebody said that, that was code word for ain't no bitches there.
Well, there were bitches there, but they was all like, they was all like three, 4 years older than me. I was like, probably what, 16? So these motherfuckers was like 20. I was like, God damn, man. Yeah. Well, when I said bitches, I meant for me. Man, so we get there and we bowling, and you know, like I said, we knew people in we had mutual friends, and again his younger cousins. So we just chilling at the bowling alley. So then afterwards, it's probably like 1 a.m, and he was like, "Yo, man, you trying to go to IHOP? We're gonna go get something to eat." All right, cool, shit. And like I said, everyone in the city looked up to him. They knew not to fuck with him because his reputation was one that he didn't really have to prove anymore because he had already proved that shit multiple times. So
he was
we get
an explosive, explosive temper boy.
Yeah, that and that motherfucker will fuck you up. And he carried a Rambo knife on him too. But so we get to the IHOP and him and his girl getting into some kind of altercation about this is before cell phones. So she had a little book, like a little notebook with numbers and shit in it.
Little black book.
Yeah, basically a little black book. And he just glanced over and saw some nigga's phone number in there. And you remember the two dudes, man, because their name were like synonymous with each other. But so
them bammers?
Yeah, man. He saw their numbers. And so he
why
got
was their names always together?
I don't know. And I've never seen them together. That's what's funny.
I've never even seen the other dude ever. I used to call that bammer by both the names when I first met him.
Yeah. You must be Steve and James. Like, what?
that's man. That nigga Steve and James over there.
So they get into a little altercation, and they're quietly, we're still waiting to be seated, but they're quietly kind of going back and forth. And some drunk Middle Eastern or Hispanic dude, I think it was a Hispanic dude, he's just like staring because he can obviously tell there was a problem. So my boy O looks at him and was like, the fuck you looking at? Why the fuck you all up in my face? And I was like, God damn. Hey, well, here's his reputation. So the dude said, I'm looking at your ugly face. He shouldn't have said that.
His family probably just finished watching Menace to Society or some shit. I feel sorry for your mother.
Man, so O's girl drags him outside of the restaurant because everyone knew what was going to happen. So the dude follows and tries to get in his face while his girl's holding him back. So I had like a $400 Eddie Bauer jacket on, right? Well, Eddie Bauer coat. You remember them joints?
Mm-hmm. Man. You know, shit, you know all I had. I had three of them.
Man, I unzipped that bitch. I had the cream color joint too. And I just took the joint off, threw it on the ground. And I'm like, shit, fuck it, it's on. So I jump up in dude's face and I got my two fingers like right on his forehead. Like, nigga, do you know who the fuck you fucking with? Like, yo, we will fuck you up out here. And next thing you know, I felt a swift, like a whoosh come by my head. And then the dude that I have my two fingers on his face, he fell. And I'm like, damn, did I just hit him?
Air bended his ass.
Yo, he came and swung like, oh, ran up behind me, swung from behind me over my shoulder and punched the dude in the face. The dude drops. And he was like, well, later on, he was like, hey, man, you better be glad you ain't moving your head while I was running up behind you because I would have killed you. So at like however old O was, he's probably, what, 18. He dropped a grown ass, probably 30-year-old motherfucker. So next thing you know, I'm like, shit, well, it's on, because his boys was out there. So his boys was like whistling, hey, come around the corner, talking to their boy who got up. He was all loopy and shit. So they go around the corner, and me and Oak, we were running full speed chasing him. We're like, we're going to fuck his boys up too. And jeez, next thing you know, we run around the corner, and this motherfucker's pulled a damn gun out on us. So I was like, oh,
gotta go.
Fuck. Yeah. So Oak turned around. He did a U-turn, a spinning 1 foot turn. And I'm still running towards the dude because I didn't see the gun. I'm still running towards him. And then, oh, I see him coming towards me. And I'm like, what? Yo, why the fuck this nigga running towards me? So he grabs me as he's running towards me like, they got a gun, nigga. And I look, I see the gun. I'm like, oh, shit. So we run and we jump in the car. And then these niggas like chasing us through the entire city. And we get like, we're trying to lose them. So we couldn't lose them. And I had an idea. I'm like, shit, let's go down to the projects, because some Mexicans, I think, well, they weren't Mexicans. I think they were El Salvadorian. I think that's the.
Yeah, those are the ones you don't fuck with, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Because those are the ones who have guns that'll shoot you. So I'm like, yo, let's go down to the projects. They will not follow us into the projects. So we go down to the projects. We pulled into an alley off of probably Madison Street or somewhere. And of course, like we thought, they knew where they were and they kept rolling. So I was like, God damn, my first time hanging out with this nigga, man. I almost got shot. I almost died. Like, damn, man. But I tell that story to say that's the kind of character reference. That's the type of person he was. But at the same time, he had his shit together. He had already kind of, he had 1 foot in the streets and 1 foot into.
On a banana peel.
Yeah, you ain't lying. No, one foot into becoming a responsible adult. He's always had a job. Everyone else that I hung with, they didn't have jobs. They weren't even interested in jobs. And I remember O would always tell me, yo, man, you need to get your money up, man. You need to get your money up. You need to get a job, man, because this street shit and selling drugs and all that shit, man, that's temporary money, man. You know, you need a consistent paycheck, basically. So he started like telling me that shit. And I'm young. I'm like, whatever. But again, looking up to him, it's like, you know what? Maybe he's on to something. And then he was like one of the first people we knew to get first people I knew that got his own apartment, got his own car. And, you know, he was doing real well. So I really looked up to him. And, you know, believe it or not, his reputation did follow him. But he was also getting his shit together, which helped me get my shit together, yo. So, you know, I appreciate that dude a lot, man. I don't think I ever told him that either.
Yeah, he damn sure was out of our contemporaries within a couple years of our age. He was the first. But well, even though he was older than us, so obviously he was the first. But in terms of just our circle of friends, I will say that I don't want to say his name. You remember we saw him that day in the red sweatsuit in my neighborhood? He was like, who was that? And I was like, oh, that's that dude, man. I knew him. And he had on that real tight.
Yeah, we was about to have to beat his ass.
Yeah, but it's funny because he was my friend. Out of our actual friends in our circle, he was the first amongst our age group to get his shit together. I mean, this dude, his shit been together so long, he about retired and got multiple businesses now. And I had my shit together very early because I had a kid way too soon. But he was on it like way early on. And he kind of helped me realize, too, I need to stop dicking around. Besides my brother, too, because my brother and then my cousin, which my brother was, you know, real close with him, they helped me get my shit together, too. Especially when my daughter was born, when I was only 18. And I started to realize I need to do something else besides working bullshit jobs, working security at the mall, working at the school board, doing laboring work. And I got in the fire department like all my uncles. And, you know, I guess like what I said earlier in the show, different people with different phases. That's when I entered a different phase of my life with different people that looked out for me. And it kind of went away from family, even though my uncles were in, I didn't see him a lot because it was different shifts. It went to people that knew me since I was in Pampas because of my uncles and also coworkers. And for a majority of my life, my adult life, I had a lot of people looking out for me that kept me in line and helped me be successful before I got disabled, obviously. But I was on my way. And, you know, a lot of people took me under their wing, and a lot of those lessons I learned from those dudes in the fire department, man, I still carry them with me to this day.
Man, And that, you know, that's something that this generation, from my perspective at least, because I don't really hang out or I'm not really around any of these younger, you know, early 20s, late teens.
Oh, I am. You're right. And everything you say.
They nigga don't even know what I'm about to say, but yep, you're right, man. Nah, they
these niggas don't even know how to talk, man. These niggas don't even, and if any of y'all niggas is listening to this show right now, sorry, but not sorry. Y'all niggas can't even hold conversations. I'd be looking at them like they just be staring, saying weird things. Yeah. And these conversations be like, it'd be a bunch of catchphrases, song lyrics, and acronyms. I'm like, what the fuck is you talking about, man?
GTFO, bro. Hey, wait, what?
Like, what?
Yeah, man.
Niggas wearing fucking face piercings and just niggas be looking extra. Like, why you gotta be all extra for, man?
See, I don't really have a problem with the way they look, although I do find it rather funny. But, you know, I mean, generations go through phases. And right quick, too.
I'm not gonna say I care. I don't care how they look. But what I'm saying is the niggas act like they look. And that's the problem. It's like, you know, you look simple and you are simple. And it's like,
you look like a weirdo.
Yeah, if you're going to be simple, if you're going to look simple, don't act. I mean, I'm sure we looked simple in our day, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, if you want to look simple, don't act simple.
Man, I'm telling you, man, I just don't see that. And, you know, the catchphrase I hear a lot now with people is, you know, giving people their flowers while they're here. And, you know, there's one more thing too. Oh, just jumping back to old man, because I've been thinking about this, man. I need to actually call him, man, because we had gotten really, really tight after that whole IHOP incident. And he straight up told me, he was like, yo, the reason why, you know, I kind of took you under my wing and started fucking with you real tough is because that night that shit was going down, shit, before I could do anything, you was up in dude's face. And I knew right then, yo, I fuck with this little nigga right here, because I know he got my back if some shit goes down. And one
shit
of the
went
things,
down multiple times.
Yeah, always had his back too, man. Even when we were outnumbered, man. But, you know, like,
I was in Philly at the time. I was pissed. We was planning on that excursion for days and days. And then I fucking go to Philly. And then I get back home and you tell me what happened. I was mad as I don't know what. I'm like, you niggas had to do that shit when I was in Philly.
Man, we got maced, pepper sprayed, and... Man, that was one of the biggest brawls. That shit was like your brawl in front of the school, probably, man. But
man, I was pissed. I was like, why y'all had to do that shit now? You knew I was going to Philly. You knew I was in Philly. Man, I was so pissed, yo.
Man, that shit was fun, man. But where I was going with it, though, is after me and him got really, really tight, right? That is when I could literally go anywhere, not only in the city, but there were places outside of the city that we really didn't venture to very often. I could go anywhere, and I would have random people just coming up to me, and they were older heads, and they were just dapping me up like, yo, what's up, man? What's up, little man? Yo, you O's man, right? Yeah. And that shit, at first, it kind of threw me for a loop, because when you see strangers that you don't know walking up on you, and these weren't, you know, upstanding citizens, you automatically go into, you know, the whole fight or flight, like, all right, here we go. And I just got so used to random people that I never saw before, that I never knew. I didn't even know their names, coming up to me, dapping me up like, yo, what's up, man? Look, if you ever in this area and you got any problems, yo, just holler at me. Okay, whoever you are.
That shit happened to me too. Fucking with that. Same shit happened to me. Like, because I hung with y'all, people that I didn't know, or people that I knew but didn't know a lot about, like, you remember Craig and all them? Getting tight with them opened up a whole new group of people. And then I was laughing when I found out a lot of the people that y'all knew was people that I had known since I was in like second grade, like Rambo and Rocky and all them dudes. Like, man, I grew up with them. Yeah. When I moved to the other side of town, those was the people I hung with. And that's why I was laughing. Yeah. Like, damn, man, like, y'all niggas know Rocky? How y'all know Rocky? How y'all know Rambo? He was an old head, Rambo was. But it was just funny how you start to, that's when you finally start to realize how small the world is, yeah, and even how smaller our city was.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That shit used to be. I remember one time when we were about to get in a fight in Woodbridge, we were about to get jumped, and next thing you know, a car rolls up. This is no lie, y'all. We're about to get jumped in an apartment complex in Woodbridge. It was me and one of my other boys, and we didn't call anybody. We didn't tell anybody anything. It was just like a one of those encounters that just happened. A car rolls up, screeches the tires, two dudes jump out with baseball bats, and I'm like, yo, we really about to get fucked up out here. So I'm looking at my mans. I'm like, hey, I think we probably need to run. And of course, my boy thought he was Tupac or something. Now, I don't run from nobody. These niggas got bats. So the dudes with bats, I'm like, fuck, I can't run and leave him. Because, yo, I'm all about self-preservation. So the dudes with the bats ran up and they ran past us and started swinging the bats at the other niggas. I'm like, damn, hey, you know them? Nah.
Who the fuck is them?
Yo, I still to this day, I know the dude's face. I do not know his name. So he came back. He was like, hey, you O's man, right?
Was it that dark skinned dude?
Yeah, dark skinned bald head dude, kind of big.
Yo, you know what's crazy? Let me tell you a story about him. For some reason, we would talk on the phone. I don't know why. And I remember one time he hit me up and said, hey, dog, I'm at Springfield. You trying to come? I was like, all right. He's like, yeah, some niggas up here I think might be trying to start something. It was just me and him for like 4 hours at Springfield Mall. I never knew his name. I don't even know how we would communicate on the phone. I don't know his name. But I remember, like, I used to, when you was gone for a while and O was gone, everybody was gone. It, for some reason, I started hanging out with him and I do not know his name.
Man, I don't know his name either, young. That nigga was a ghost, but he always rolled up at like opportune times. It's like, it's almost like seeing a fucking ghost, man. Cause
at the bus stop, you be at the bus stop and he'll pop up.
Like, nigga, don't you got a car? Yeah. Why are you at the bus stop?
No, what like, I mean is, man, we'll be at the bus stop and he'll ride by. Or he'll just start walking up. Like, damn, where the fuck you come from?
Yeah, man. That dude, I still don't know his name, but shit, whoever the fuck you are, man, thanks. Because we was about to get jumped out there. And all it took was what was them joints? The old police cars? Not Capris.
Crown Vic?
Yeah, Crown Vic. Yeah, old Crown Vic and two niggas with baseball bats who we never saw before. And so, Bama came back and said, yeah, you O's, man. All right, man. Yeah, I got you, man. You know, I saw it from across the way that them niggas was trying to jump y'all, man. You know, just be careful out here. Just jumped in his car and left. And I was like, damn, that was odd. Like, no one even summoned you. What the fuck is you, Batman, nigga?
I'm about to say, that nigga is Batman, yo.
Nah.
No one summoned you.
I got a Batman. I got a Batman.
And if this bat don't work...
I got the gap,
I was gonna
man.
Go, but I was gonna go on and on, but I just stopped. Remember, we used to go on and on with that shit.
Yeah, man. That but yeah, yo. So again, you know, that's a testament to him, and he also he was well connected, but also helped me out as far as getting a job. So I've always had a job for the most part since even before then, because we worked at Domino's when we was like what 13 years old.
He was passing low-ass out flyers, man. I still got that name tag somewhere that say P. Diddy on it.
Damn. Man, we always had a job, but he made me realize the importance of not hanging in the streets so much and getting drunk and, you know, getting high and doing all kinds of dumb shit, man. So, but moving on, right? So P's brother, he actually, you know, he hit me to a lot of shit too. And my favorite thing that stuck with me is, nah, man, you don't hold the blunt like that. You hold it with the cherry up because fire burns up.
And fire burns up.
I was high as shit. And I wasn't a huge smoker, but, you know, when an older head says, hey, you want to come smoke with me, you go smoke with him. I was high as
was
shit.
Was that the night we watched the Mike Tyson Botha fight?
Nah. This was the night when we was playing the instruments and I had my girl with me at your parents' house. And next thing you know,
we was causing a ruckus. My parents is in New Orleans, man. We was playing fucking got drums and congos at 2 a.m.
Yeah, man. And then this nigga explained fire to me and how to make a blunt burn. And I was just intrigued. He's like, if you hold it upwards, it don't burn fast. But if you hold it down, the fire burns up and it burns up your weed. Then I got so goddamn high, I couldn't drive my girl home. So I had to get you to drive. And I was laid out in the back
seat.
Laid
out on the floor.
And she kept
talking
to me.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In
the back seat. Yeah.
Yeah, man. She's like, hey, how's the weather? I was like, man, shut the fuck up. Like, I was high
I'm always
shit,
polite,
man.
Yo. Like, I was always polite. And it was like, Dan would put me in uncomfortable, awkward situations, right? So it's like, she was talking to me, and I'm trying to be nice. And like, yeah. He was like, shut the fuck up. He don't want to talk to you. So I just kind of looked at her with a, like, that, like, I don't speak English smile. Like, I don't know what to say. Like, should I tell her, yeah, he right, I don't want to talk to you? Or should I tell Dan, man, she all right, man? Or like how how you would do like random strange things in the Grand Prix. Like that time you turn the key off. Yeah. Like, I don't know what to say. I'm sitting back here. What do I do? Do I laugh or not laugh?
Well, it's just, man, that was my favorite thing. I still do that today, too. I put people in awkward positions just to see how they react to them. But so, yeah, man, your brother, he worked in the he worked for the school board. And, man, we would just go up and see him every now and then, and he would kick game to us and tell us, like, certain shit. And, man, then I got my cousin Marcus, who, you know, he was slated to be.
He saved my life. I ain't gonna say how, but you know how.
Well, you might as well, man. I mean, shit. Nah. That shit. All
right. He talked me out of killing somebody. And that conversation he had with me really framed my adult perspective on life. He said, all right, if you do this, ain't no turning back. And I thought about it. I said, you know what? And I went in the fire department then. Even though I'd lost a lot of family members, I was really mean back in the day. I didn't care. I was a fucked up mean person. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. Kill that motherfucker.
Nigga, you still are.
I mean, I am, but I'm not violent. Well, I'm patient now. I'll say that. And I said, you know what? He right. I can't take that shit back. I looked at it like a tattoo, right? I'm 18. I may want a tattoo right now. When I'm 35, that tattoo may not sit very well with me. So I look at it like this, like, okay, I'm going to kill this motherfucker. I'm 20. I'm going to kill this motherfucker now. And I wasn't in the fire department yet. And then I'm like, well, what if in 20 years or 15 years, I look back on that and that shit eats me up? And I'm telling you, he saved my life, man. Because I don't know how I would have coped with that today.
And it's funny the way he did it, because I just sat there quietly the whole time, because P came, he hollered at me. He was like, hey, man, I need a joint, man. I need a joint that to handle some business. So I said, okay, we can go holler at my cousin because he got connections. So we go over there and my cousin was like, P, you sure you want this? P was like, hell yeah, I want this, man. I need to handle some shit, man. Are you sure? Because, yo, I'll get it for you. No problem, man. Just don't mention my name. Don't bring me up in this shit. But let me ask you. And then, you know, he gave you the whole spiel. And what's funny is he was encouraging you to do it by, well, he was encouraging you not to do it by encouraging you to do it. Like, okay, but just remember that, you know, this is it. Can't take it back after you do it. And whatever happens afterwards, man, you got to deal with the shit, man. So anyway, we left there, like, both, you know, gained some insight, man. And like, these kids, again, going back to these kids today, they don't have that, man, because they don't respect the people that came before them. They don't respect even like these 18, 19, 20 year old kids. They don't respect the 25, 26, 27 year olds, man. You know what I'm saying? It's like, nope. The lack of respect equals a lack of knowledge, because you have to learn on your own now. You cannot learn from other people's mistakes and other people's experiences if you are not respecting these people and listening to these people. So yeah, go ahead and fuck up. You're gonna fuck your whole life up.
My brother, you know, his mentor in life pretty much was our uncle. He passed away in the early 90s, but you know, he was a legend. I mean, if you say his name today, people know who he is. But he got sick early in the 90s and passed away. But he would give my brother a lot of insight. My brother told me a story once. If you knew anything about T.C. Williams in the 80s, they had one of the best football teams in the country. And they had a big time player who was also a kingpin, well, a major drug dealer. And my brother would talk. He told me a story how he talked to my uncle once at one of the football games before my brother got to TC. He was playing for GW when GW had a team, and they didn't lose a game in the 80s, except for once. He told my brother he wanted to be like this particular guy. I mean, I'm sorry. My brother told my uncle he wanted to be like this particular football player. And my uncle said, you don't want to be like him. And my brother didn't know what he meant. He said, you be like you. Essentially, you be like you. Don't worry about trying to be like somebody else. And it ended up paying off, because that dude ended up going to jail for a long time. And I'm not saying, you know, he's a good dude. I met him a few times. But, you know, my brother ended up playing for TC and making his own name. So, you know, I mean, a lot of the lessons my brother passed down to me and my cousin passed down to me, I'm pretty sure a lot of them came from my uncle.
Yeah, man. And again, that's how shit used to be structured, man. Like, the older people would pass down lessons to the younger people. And it wasn't in a preachy kind of way. And it wasn't in a demeaning or belittling kind of way. It's more like, yo, I'm gonna drop this knowledge on you. And, you know, whatever you choose to do with it, that's on you. So that in my life, again, that brings me, I guess, my last male influence that also helped me develop and become a man is shout out to my cousin Craig. And some of you may know him, but he I moved up when I was homeless and had nowhere to go. I moved up to Pennsylvania and ended up hanging out with Craig a lot. And I used to always be scared of him because he's a big ass nigga and he used to always look mean. So I'm like, man, fuck that nigga, mean as shit. But he's taught me a lot of stuff, actually. And I was more open at 19, 20 years old to learning from his experiences. And some of the things, I even talked about this on another show. One of the things that I still do to this day is I go out of my way to find the people wherever I'm at, like the janitors, like if I'm at a hotel, the house cleaning, the bellhops, I go out of my way to talk to them, speak to them, and treat them like they're people, because they're, for lack of a better term, they're at the bottom of the totem pole, and they're used to getting shit on by people because, oh, you're just a lowly janitor, you're just a lowly bag boy or whatever. Yo,
you know what I'd say? I wouldn't say bottom of the totem pole per se, because a lot of those people get paid fairly decent and have a lot of good lessons. Like when I worked at the hotel, Mr. Will, I would say a lot of the time people perceive them at the bottom of the social totem pole, where they look at them and think, you just a janitor, or you just a doorman, or you just a building engineer, maintenance man.
You're not important, basically. Yeah. So
they essentially think you're not important.
That's what I got from Craig. That's one of the things that I still carry to this day is I go out of my way. And just for some context, I'm an IT professional. I deal with all kinds of IT people, high-level professionals, CEOs, things of that nature. But before I go, like, you know, hey, how's it going, Bob? How's it going? Nah, if I walk past a janitor, yo, what's up, man? You all right? You doing good? I don't even know you, but I'm going to stop and speak to you and recognize you and acknowledge you, because people appreciate shit like that, man, because these people work hard. And they actually probably work harder than the fucking CEOs, CFOs, CIOs, and all these people. So I go out of my way, man. So that's just the one thing Craig taught me. Well, he said to me, and it just resonated. And I still carry that shit today, man. Go out of your way to treat everybody equally. And in fact, show people that are looked down upon a little extra love, because they appreciate that shit.
Well, yeah, the thing with me is, like, I had those jobs. My brother had those jobs. My granddad had those jobs, you know? So we came up in our family with people that had those jobs. So to us, it was never nothing. Like, to us, like, those was the real people that worked them jobs. So, you know, I ended up working school board like a lot of other folks, maintenance shop like my uncle and them did before he got in the fire department too. You know, I mean, we worked those same jobs. So it was all, and I was a doorman at the hotel uptown. I mean, downtown DC. I'm saying uptown now because I'm in Charlotte, right? But so it was never a thing where I always, you know, my whole life essentially, I always was friends with the janitor, friends with, you know, because I knew these people. And then when I was in Maury and I was in Polk, we knew the janitors because they were family friends, you know, so we just always knew who they were, especially, you know, when I was born, we lived in the projects, and then we moved to the south side and west side. So we lived amongst the same people that was at our school. So, I mean, we was related to them, too. I ended up being one. So, I mean, man, it wasn't never a thing. So what Dan is saying is, like, yeah, man, in case people don't know, like, you got to show people respect. And a lot of times people assume, I'm going to use, okay, we said we weren't going to talk about this dumb virus. But for example, nobody ever spoke nicely to the janitor, to the nurse. Hell, I was a firefighter EMT. People hated us. Nobody ever spoke nicely to us. Nobody spoke nicely to the cashiers at the grocery stores. But now suddenly everybody says they're great, and without them, we wouldn't have anything.
Yeah, it's McDonald's, like, wow, employees. Yeah.
Like, wow, a few months ago, you motherfuckers was being disrespectful, rude, and nasty to service industry and public safety. And now suddenly they're so great. And watch, when this thing goes away, everybody's going to forget and start treating people in the service industry, public safety industry, like shit again. Mark my words.
Man, that brings up a good point, man, because prior to the whole pandemic thing, there's been a push for years for people to raise not only the minimum wage, but these service workers to, I think the number was $15 an hour. And you have so many people out here screaming, there's no way a McDonald's employee should make $15 an hour. A grocery store cashier should make $15. They're unskilled labor. But right now, if all of these motherfuckers were to go collect unemployment, because let's be honest, with this extra $600, they can probably make more collecting unemployment than they were making at their jobs. It's like, yo, so if all these people weren't there, what would you do now? Man, we need more. The grocery stores need to be open. Well, you know what I'm saying? McDonald's needs to be open. So, I mean, like, you just...
Truck drivers, too. It's like if truck drivers, I saw someone that said if truck drivers stop driving, all our grocery stores are run out of supplies in 3 days. And, you know, it's just funny because the same people that say these people are unskilled, I'm like, they the same people that got their job because they know somebody and learn their shit on the job. You know, people just always forget where they come from and don't acknowledge. This is the whole point of the show. We acknowledging people that helped us, right? A lot of people don't do that. People don't do that. So they look down on other people who may not have had necessarily people looking out for them or may have made a mistake in high school or early adult life. So they have to work two jobs in the service industry. And if anybody wants to say that these people don't work or they say you need to work harder, goddamn, how much harder do you think somebody's supposed to work? Yeah, those jobs ain't no joke. It's like back in the day, right? Dan, you know, was a manager and had his own franchise. Well, was of his own store, right?
Whole franchise.
Yeah, whole franchise. Had his own store. And I remember how this went, right? It's like, okay, you get paid a lot of money, but the reason you get paid a lot of money is because you're working from open to close.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, damn, am I really making that much money? Or I'm just working a whole fucking lot of hours?
And that's essentially what it was, man. Working a whole lot. And that's why I stopped being a manager, because I'm like, man, fuck this. I ain't working all these damn hours, man. Shit, I can't even enjoy the fucking money I'm making because I'm always fucking at work. But yo, so what I want to do, I want to ask you something. But to kind of close, what I want to do is send a shout out. I'm sure they don't listen, but in the event that they do, you know, I want to shout out my boy O. I want to shout out my cousin Marcus and my cousin Craig, because those are some of the most instrumental male figures in my life. And, you know, I've had other family members and, you know, grandmother, grandfather, things like that. But these three stick out the most as far as helping mold me, especially when I had a pretty troubled childhood, well, troubled teenage years and going through a lot of issues with the law and breaking it. So, you know, these three brothers, they really looked out for me, and I appreciate them, and I also appreciate the knowledge that they gave me. I can also say that I'm gonna let P speak for himself, but what I'm gonna say is this, P, at our age now, right, it's no secret that we've both been very helpful and very vocal to try to help the younger generation, whether it be younger family members or friends of the family, their children or what have you. Do you ever get any appreciation from them whatsoever when you try to help them?
Hell no. Motherfuckers don't listen to shit and treat me like shit. I'm like, oh, you know what? Here's the thing, though. I don't take it personal. Because I say, okay, well, you know, I didn't listen all the time. But I mean, I showed respect, though. But ultimately, I learned how to disassociate my feelings from that. I just like, oh, well, you'll listen or you'll figure it out one day. Right. So, you know, I mean, ultimately, I get a lot of I learned that people in their heart, they know what's really going on and what's not. They may not acknowledge it. They may not show it. They may not seem like they're listening. They may pretend like they don't care. But ultimately, people know. For example, somebody does something to you. They pretend like they didn't do nothing. In their heart, in their head, they know what really happened. And so I get a lot of my solace in knowing, you know, you can treat me like shit all you want. You know how I really is. You know what I really taught you. And that's how I get by on a lot of things, because I do remember there are times when I didn't feel like listening. And I'm going to give a shout out to some people, too, in a minute. When I didn't feel like listening necessarily, or I didn't know I was listening. But when something happened, I instantly fell back on something that was told to me. And I'm like, damn, I didn't even realize I was listening. So, you know, I mean, I brought up a little while ago, my father, obviously, my grandfather, obviously, you know, my big brother, my older cousin, you know, then I got my uncles, and I got the guys in the fire department, man, who, you know, Steve, who's pretty much like my uncle. He's actually my cousin's uncle, you know, Cliff, you know, Bob, and it's, you know, I love Bob to death. He really was instrumental in helping keep me sane after I lost my career, because he was the first one to call and check on me and the only one that stayed in contact with me the entire time. Now, I got others who I've talked to since then, but Bob was always right there with me, led me through the Fire Academy, everything. You know, Al, who's passed away, sadly, a couple of years ago, you know, he taught me a lot when it come to working out, bodybuilding. You know, even people that was my age in the fire department, like my homie Dobbs and Mike, those dudes came to the firehouse when I was not motivated. And because they were highly motivated and professional and disciplined, they got me to be better. I mean, it's so many people, man. You know, my old captain, you know, it's so many people. I can't even name them all, but I just feel like, I guess what I'm going to leave with is listen to something. And anytime, okay, let me start over. I tell my stepson, right, who don't like to listen before he moved out, you don't like to hear when we talk to you about yourself. He says, stop nagging me. I said, what's going to be shocking to you is when you grow up, you're going to wish that people would sit down and talk to you about you. Because when you grow up, you realize don't nobody give a fuck about you and don't nobody care about telling you what you need to know for yourself. Yeah. And, you know, that's how it is, man. Like, you got to appreciate and listen when people talk to you about something. They don't have to waste their time. Take something from everybody, man. You can learn something from everybody, even people you don't like. Learn something from everybody, what they say, what they do. You know, one more thing. I see people online every now and then say, don't take money advice or don't take life advice from somebody that's broke or somebody that's this or that. I'm like, how stupid is that? Because ultimately, I'd rather take advice, financial advice, career advice from somebody who made a mistake than somebody who always had everything without effort or without struggle. Because those people can tell you where they fucked up, you know, or where something went wrong. So, you know, just listen to people, man. Watch, listen, learn, and just don't ever think everybody can learn something from anybody, you know. Yeah. And if you don't appreciate that, then you just gonna find yourself struggling a whole lot.
Now that you say that too, real quick, this came to mind as far as learning from other people's mistakes, right? I know somebody who was an entrepreneur, had multiple businesses, and all of their businesses failed, except for the last one, which was successful many, many years later after all of his failures. He would give me little, you know, little tidbits here and there of information. I didn't want to be an entrepreneur, so I'm like, I really don't care. But it's like P said, I didn't know I was listening, but I was listening. And, you know, he was able to pinpoint each time he fucked up, like why his business, why his first business didn't work out, why his second, why his third didn't work out. He knew exactly what went wrong. So, and knowing that, you can learn from people like that. Same with homeless people. They can all probably go back to that one defining moment that caused them to become homeless. Like, you know, whether it be a substance abuse problem, whether it be a financial problem, whatever. That's the type of shit that I like to hear. What made you become home? Like, how did you become homeless? What was that defining thing that happened that led you to become homeless? And, you know, a lot of people ignore people like that, man. Like, you see someone homeless and you either think they're scamming or, you know, they're lazy. They don't want to get a job. They're an alcoholic. They're a drug addict. Even if they are a drug addict and alcoholic, they could probably still go back to that one defining moment and say, this is why I ended up homeless. And I want to know that shit, because just in case I ever come across that shit, man.
Well, the thing is, I learned from when I lost my career. You know, I was at the high, I was, right before I lost mine, I was at the highest that I, you know, I could got at that time. I could have gotten at that time. I was getting ready to get promoted to officer. And then I got disabled and lost it. Unforeseen circumstances, right? So people don't realize the fine line between success and failure. It can happen very quickly. I mean, you would think people would have learned that after the last stock market crash when people lost their jobs and went homeless. But I mean, people really don't understand in this country, especially with the capitalism and how we don't really have a lot of social safety nets. You know, your chances at being, whether you buying a house or being homeless, because I was about to buy a house before I lost everything. You know, it is very fragile and people don't really understand how truly fragile it really is. All it takes for a company to say, or a government that you work for to say, we don't need you anymore. And what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. And you know what, though, you bring up the 08, 09 crisis. Today, even during the whole coronavirus thing, I'm looking at people now who, well, they're getting furloughed, they're losing their jobs, and their jobs are probably, like, we saw this shit before. This is, I mean, it's a different thing, but we saw this shit before. people are losing their jobs, losing everything, losing their livelihoods. And a lot of the younger people are under the impression that, okay, once things normalize, my job will hire me back. No. What happened in 2008, 2009 is companies learned how to do the same, if not more, with less, as far as less workforce.
That's what's happening now. Yeah. That's what's happening now. They learn, oh, shit, we still manage to do this without that. Well, why are we going to waste our money?
Yeah. And some of them were like posting record profits 2009, 2010, man.
Yep. The oil industry was, for sure.
Exactly. So, yeah, man. I mean, and then you also have, I saw an article, just close with this, just came to my mind. I saw an article today where this woman was, she was in tears crying about how she bought multiple houses to use as short-term rentals for like Airbnb, and all of her people canceled because of COVID, and now she can't afford to pay the mortgages on these properties, and she expects people to feel sorry for her. Now, like P said, capitalism, but it can go both ways. Like, okay, you over leveraged yourself to try to make money. You didn't have a safety net. So I'm sorry, I don't feel sorry for you. I feel more sorry for the people that work 9 to 5s and they're losing their homes. But like, no, you went out and bought multiple properties for short term rentals. Nah, I don't feel sorry for you.
Yeah, you didn't lose your home. You lost your additional homes.
Multiple.
The big difference there.
Yeah, exactly, man. So, you know, I guess that's all I had to say. I just wanted to, I was thinking about it this morning on a toilet there. You know, I was sitting on the toilet and I said, damn,
you
man.
You was sitting on the toilet playing Candy Crush.
Man, I ain't.
You about to make a homosexual reference?
Nah, I'm about to make a doo-doo joke, but I was like, eh, fuck it.
It's too early to get back into shit jokes.
Yeah, man. So, no, but this morning I was thinking about it. And I'm sure this happens to P too. You just sitting there with time on your hands and you're thinking about things that happened in the past. And I'm like, yo, I've never officially told these brothers who, you know, how instrumental they were in me becoming a man. Because I, unlike, you know, P, and unlike a lot of people, I didn't really have a father, or and my grandfather, much like P, passed away when I was younger. So, you know, just wanted to shout those brothers out, man. And I actually, at some point, hopefully, I'll give them a call and just, you know, let them know I appreciate them.
You forgot to thank Dr. Malachi York.
Yeah, for so we didn't join a cult.
Yeah, and some hey. With some cardboard pyramids.
Hey, yeah, and then get touched on. Hey, come here, boy. Let me, man, I'm about to do the Mr. T. Eddie Murphy joke.
Come here, boy. You look mighty cute in them jeans.
Man, so you got anything else, P?
Nah, man, that's about it, yo. I really think I said it all. I went on a couple of little rambling, I'm not going to call them tirades. Went on a couple of little rants here and there, but I pretty much said it all, man. I just, good to be back. It's been a long time. I know people probably thought that, I don't know, we broke up like a New Edition or some shit. And it's like, nah, man, people be having stuff going on. You know, I mean, shows go off season, podcasts go off season. We got a lot of things going on. We spoke before we kind of took a hiatus that we probably would be anyway, because, you know, Dan gets real busy this time of year. You know, I was speaking about seasonal issues that I tend to have. And then we all know I got a shitload of kids. And then this virus started to hit. And frankly, I've been self-quarantining since the end of February. So it's just a lot of things been going on, but you know, we ain't gone nowhere.
Nigga, you've been self-quarantining since like 2003, man.
Hey man, I ain't got I was in the fire department then. I couldn't self-quarantine back then.
Just go lock yourself in a bathroom in the firehouse. I'm not coming out, guys. This has been another episode of A Few Screws Loose, the podcast, and the award-winning podcast. So don't forget, check us out on social media at Screws Loose Pod on Twitter, IG, as well as YouTube. And my name is Dan. I'm one of your hosts. You can keep up with me at I Am Dan on Drugs on Twitter and Instagram. And again, Black Law Podcast, or Black Law and Legalize, is another podcast I do. So if you want to hear more of me, check me out. And also want to shout out the Breaks Media Network too, at The Breaks Media Network.
And I am P from Charlotte. You find me on Instagram and on Twitter at P from Charlotte, all one word. And if you want to hear more of me, go back and listen to the old episodes of A Few Screws Loose podcast. That's all you're going to hear from me.